I want to invite you to take your Bible today and to open it to Judges chapter 8. Chapter 8 in the book of Judges. We're going to be beginning with verse 1 when we get there. I want to bring you up on where we were in our last lesson. So as we concluded our last lesson, the Midianites and the Midianite allies had escaped from the valley of Jezreel and had made it over to the Jordan River Valley. Now Gideon had chased them with his 300 men. 300 men had surrounded that valley, had scared the Midianites and their allies to death. And during that time, as those men ran towards the Jordan River, as the Midianites ran towards the Jordan River, Gideon called for help from the Ephraimites. And they did not disappoint. They took control, they quickly that night, took control of the Jordan River Valley. They went west from their land to the Jordan River Valley. From Ephraim's land, they went west. And they went and they moved north and they captured all of the military leaders. That would be Oreb and Zeb. They captured Oreb and Zeb and they killed all the military soldiers between the area that Gideon had asked them to take care of. And they did not disappoint. Now Gideon crossed the Jordan River upstream from where these Ephraimite men were taking. So Gideon had crossed upstream and he was making his way down south on the east side of the Jordan River. And the Ephraimites took Oreb and Zeb, the military leaders of the Midianites, and severed their heads. And then they crossed over the Jordan River and delivered those heads to Gideon on the east side. You would think all was well, but it was not amongst the Israelite tribes. So at the beginning of chapter 8, where we are picking up today, we learn that the men of Ephraim were offended by Gideon. Why? Well, chapter 8, verse 1, answers that question. Then the men of Ephraim said to him, "What is this thing you have done to us, not calling us when you went to fight against Midian?" And they contended with him vigorously. What is going on here? Why were the men of Ephraim so offended because Gideon did not call them to fight at first? Instead, he called them at the last minute when he thought he needed them. It would have seemed that the men of Ephraim would have been relieved and glad to stay out of any fight they did not have to face. But something deeper is going on here. For those of us who live in the Western mindset, we seem to fend for ourselves rather than for others. But the Israelites were of the Eastern mindset. It is a mindset filled with traditions. It is a mindset filled with loyalties to family. And these loyalties were strong bonds through multiple generations, yet they had a pecking order in them. Perhaps these men of Ephraim were offended because Gideon had broken the pecking order. Of the 12 tribes of the nation of Israel, 10 were the direct sons of Jacob, but 2 were Jacob's grandsons, Manasseh and Ephraim. They were sons of Joseph. Joseph got the double blessing, if you remember. Manasseh and Ephraim were brothers, the sons of Joseph. What does that mean? It means that anyone in the tribe of Manasseh who needed help, if a Manassehite could not help them, he was to go to his Ephraimite brother first. So if someone who was of the tribe of Manasseh needed help, another tribe of Manasseh person should help. But if not, go to your brother first. Tight bonds of blood. That would be the pecking order. So if the Ephraimite brother could not help, then, and only then, would he go to one of his cousin brothers. But Gideon had jumped the order and had gone straight to the cousin brothers. He had gone straight to Zebulun and to Asher and to Naphtali. And at the last minute, Gideon reached out to his Ephraimite brothers for help. Now, we all live in family units today. We all have family members who get in trouble and try everything else in the world until their backs are against the wall. And then, and only then, when they have no place else to turn, they come to where they should have come in the very first place for help. By then, the trouble is a crisis. Time after time, they come with a crisis. Each time it seems greater and greater humiliation sets in. That scenario is not what is happening here with Gideon, because he has the Lord on his side. He's not coming in a crisis because the Lord is there. It did not matter who he called for help. The Lord would have made Gideon the victor anyway, and it was all well on its way. It was the Lord's promise. It was the Lord's prophecy. Gideon had heard the word of the Lord directly from the mouth of the angel of the Lord under the oak tree at Ophrah. But his Ephraimite brothers had not heard that word. They had not heard the voice of the Lord nor the instruction. They were operating solely on their bloodline relationship, their pecking order. Once called upon, they must have felt like their big brother had called on them at the last minute, because it was now an emergency. They had to have known why they were not included from the very beginning. They wanted to know why. Why were we not included? Was not Ephraim the youngest chosen by Jacob for the blessing instead of Manasseh, the oldest? You remember that? Whenever Joseph brought Manasseh and Ephraim to the bedside of Jacob, Joseph asked for the blessing upon his sons, and Jacob put his right hand on Ephraim's head instead of Manasseh, and Joseph said, "Oh, father, no, no." And Jacob said, "No, no, no, I know." So in their minds, Ephraim was to be the chosen one of those two, the younger over the older. Now, in the dividing of the promised land, Manasseh was allotted his land first. And then he had to give up some of his land to his younger brother, Ephraim tribe. This single act by Joshua psychologically bolsters the position of the tribe of Ephraim that has dominance over Manasseh in its history. The Greeks called it hegemony, a word that had grown in popularity, and it's grown in popularity today in the world cultures. It is all over our psychological and sociological studies at our colleges. It's on our radios and our TVs today. You just may be passing it by. It is, for example, the example that's happening in our media today is that America holds the position of hegemony in the world as the world power to do this, to assert its own will on all the world nations militarily, politically, and economically. And as you know, we have those in America today who are of the college culture and the more liberal culture who are saying we are wrong for holding that position in the world. The rest of the world should be able to do as they please. But yet, going along with our national military and our political and our economical strength, we also have had our religious strength that is degrading in America today. Yet, America makes up, get this, even though they are claiming we are controlling the world in this hegemony, America only makes up 4% of the population of the world. So too, Ephraim, much smaller than the tribe of Manasseh, but with more power and fidelity to the national cause of Israel, at least in their mind, they think they should have been called first. The men of Ephraim had proved themselves in their own minds that they could do the task. They were arrogant about their position to Gideon. Now, we will see later in Judges chapter 12 that this arrogance, and it's the reason I'm bringing up here in chapter 8, this arrogance of the tribe of Ephraim in this hegemony position that they think they hold will foster terrible humiliation for Ephraim in Judges chapter 12. But we'll wait to cover that part of the story until we arrive there in chapter 12. Now, for being called at the last minute to help, the verse tells us that Ephraim contended with Gideon vigorously. And doing that, they did it arrogantly. But Gideon, called by the Lord to be the deliverer of Israel, answered the men of Ephraim in a godly manner. And from Ephraim being offended, we come now to Ephraim being composed in chapter 8, verse number 2. But he said to them, "What have I done now in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer? God has given the leaders of Midian, Oreb and Zeb into your hands. And what was I able to do in comparison with you?" Then their anger towards him subsided when he said that. What great, noble, and self-control Gideon had. His Ephraim brothers attacked him personally, but he was big enough to extract himself from the issue at hand. Humbly and unassuming, he did so by asking the question, "What have I done now in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?" However, before we explain this, we must correct the English version translation here. The original Hebrew does not have the words "of the grapes" in the text. Doesn't have it. Therefore, the English version should have read like this: "Is not the gleaning of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?" In other words, it should not have read, "Is not the gleaning of the grapes of Ephraim better?" Should not have "of the grapes" in there. It should just say, "Is not the gleaning of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?" Now in whole, it should read, "What have I done in comparison with you? Is not the gleaning of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?" In other words, Gideon humbly asked, "What could I have done as great as what you have done?" And in that statement, Gideon expresses that the deeds of Ephraim in what they did in the Jordan River Valley were greater than what he and his men did at the Valley of Jezreel. Gideon explains it in the next verse, and in the next question, I should say, that's in that verse. "Is not the gleaning of Ephraim better than the vintage of Abiezer?" Now remember, Gideon was an Abiezerite. Gideon led the original attack on the Midianites in the valley, just as the workers go into the fields of the grapes first to make the harvest. Remember, Gideon was trying to hide his wheat in the wine press because he knew that they were coming, but it wasn't quite time for the harvest of the wine yet, or the grapes yet. So Gideon and his 300 workers went to the field to harvest the Midianites, just as if they had gone to harvest the grapes, but it wasn't quite time to harvest the grapes. But that picture of the grape harvest had to be in their minds and coming quickly. And so he used it with his Ephraimite brothers. He says, but in that Ephraimite, or should I say, but in the Israelite culture, under the law of the Lord, when you went to harvest a field, as you remember in the book of Leviticus and the book of Deuteronomy, the edges of the vines of the field of the grapes were always to be left for gleaning. It was so with the fight against the Midianites here too. Gideon is using a wonderful example and a wonderful story that they know the law. It was so that the fight against the Midianites, the edges of the field needed to be gleaned. In other words, not everything was done in the Valley of Jezreel. And as such, Gideon admits to the men of Ephraim that their gleaning resulted in a bounty that was much greater than the whole harvest that Gideon had originally done over in the Valley of Jezreel. You see, the word vintage in this text actually means the harvest of grapes. That's what it comes from. The word vintage comes from the old word that means vine harvest. So they knew exactly this. The Ephraimites knew exactly what Gideon was saying when he used the word vintage, the Hebrew word for the word vintage, because it meant the grape harvest. So our translators have gone ahead and told us that by putting that in that verse, in the grapes. What you've done in your grape harvest. That, you remember, that was not there, but they put it in there because it's found in that word vintage. Therefore, the writer tells us that Gideon admitted to Ephraim that his vine harvest was just meager in Israel compared to Ephraim's gleaning after Gideon's original harvest. That is why Gideon continued to praise Ephraim's capture of the Midianites' military leaders, Oreb and Zeb. After that, Gideon says, "What was I able to do in comparison with you?" As such, Gideon took his place in the hegemony below the men of Ephraim. Gideon allowed the men of Ephraim to have greater authority, or the thought of greater authority in the nation of Israel than he did as the judge called by the Lord. His answer calmed the offense of Ephraim. Now Gideon had calmed the complaints of these Ephraimites, but he would still need to handle the offense of more of his relatives. And we see Gideon shunned by relatives with his request for food on the east side of the Jordan River at a place called Succoth, here in verse number 4. Then Gideon and the 300 men who were with him came to the Jordan and crossed over, weary yet pursuing. He said to the men of Succoth, "Please give loaves of bread to the people who are following me, for they are weary. And I am pursuing Zeba and Zalmunna, the kings of Midian." The leaders of Succoth said, "Are the hands of Zeba and Zalmunna already in your hands that we should give you bread to your army?" Gideon said, "All right. When the Lord has given Zeba and Zalmunna into my hands, then I will thrash your bodies with the thorns of the wilderness and with briars." So at this point in the scripture, where the Midianites had run from the Valley of Jezreel, the writer has made his first pass. As I've talked about how the writer is making multiple passes through this story, he tells us about Ephraim and how Ephraim's been offended with Gideon. And if you remember, the men of Ephraim killed Oreb and Zeeb, and they took their heads and they delivered them over to Gideon on the east side of the Jordan River with the 300 men that he was with there on that side of the river. And when Ephraim had secured the west side of the Jordan River, all was well on that side. And now at this point in the story, the writer is making his second pass around through this story to tell us that Gideon was dealing with, or tell us what Gideon was dealing with on the east side of the Jordan River when he crossed over with his men. Gideon did not cross the river twice. This part of the story is just telling us and giving us an explanation of what Gideon was doing on the east side of the Jordan River while Ephraim was gleaning on the west side of the Jordan River. And this is a second pass through the story. And with that in mind, Gideon and his men have arrived at Succoth on that east side of the Jordan River to pursue those two kings of Midian. His name were Zeba and Zalmunna. Succoth sat east of the Jordan River. It was the place, if you remember, where Jacob landed after he ran from Esau. There Jacob built a shelter for his cattle. In those days, shelters were called booths. The name Succoth means booths. You'll know that some of our Israelite friends, our Jewish friends, have the Feast of Succoth or the Feast of Booths. Jacob had given the village its name in Genesis chapter 33, verse 17, because of him building those booths for his cattle there at Succoth. Succoth was not there at the time. That was not the name of the place. It sat in the tribal area of Gad, not Manasseh, not Reuben, but Gad, on the east side of the Jordan River. We must consider what the men of Succoth have had in their minds. Gideon stood there asking for food for his 300 men, while the men of Succoth knew that the king of Midian were traveling with 15,000 men. Now, we don't know that yet in the story, but we're coming upon that. 300 men of Gideon versus 15,000 men of Zeba and Zalmunna. No wonder the men of Succoth had a question. We have to remember that the men of Succoth did not know the whole story of Gideon facing the 120,000 Midianites in the Valley of Jezreel. But no doubt, they did not believe that Gideon and his few men could be victorious against the king of Midian and their men. It seems that the men of Succoth were fearful of retaliation from the Midianites who were oppressing them if Gideon was unsuccessful. So with that, the men of Succoth did not want to give food to Gideon's army. They did not want to take part in this battle. That led Gideon to warn the men of Succoth something very, very strong. When Gideon says, "I will thrash your bodies," he means, "I will tear your flesh." He says he will tear the flesh with the thorns and briars of the wilderness when he is victorious against Zeba or Zalmunna. With his request denied at Succoth, we see his request for food at Peniel. And the response from the men was the same as it was from Succoth. Look here with me in verse number 8. He went up from there to Peniel and spoke similarly to them. And the men of Peniel answered him just as the men of Succoth had answered. So they spoke also to the men of Peniel, saying, "When I return safely, I will tear down this tower." It was at Peniel that Jacob wrestled with the divine Lord. That's in Genesis chapter 32, verse 32. Jacob named it that place. Peniel means the face of God. Later, the location developed into a town. And after being destroyed, Jeroboam would rebuild the city over in 1 Kings chapter 12, verse 25. But at this time, Peniel is there. At this time in the story, it was just a village, and it had a lookout tower. It sat on the north bank of the Jabbok River, which emptied into the Jordan River. And no doubt the men of Peniel relied on the tower for their safety. No doubt it was a false faith that would come to an end when Gideon tears it down. We come now to consider the passage where Gideon conquers the Midianites. It is also the passage where we learn the number of troops who were in the army of Midian and its allies. Verse number 10. Now Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor, and their armies with them, about 15,000 men, all who were left of the entire army of the sons of the east, for the fallen were 120,000 swordsmen. Gideon went up by the way of those who lived in tents on the east of Nobah and Jacobah and attacked the camp when the camp was unsuspecting. When Zeba and Zalmunna fled, he pursued them and captured the two kings of Midian, Zeba and Zalmunna, and routed the whole army. Gideon found the kings, and this is what he did. We'll talk about and explain this passage when we come again together in our next lesson.